You're listening to the Wells Tech Podcast, where we talk about technology that can serve the church and its work of spreading the gospel. Wells Tech is a part of the podcast network on Streams, the internet media site sponsored by the Wisconsin Evangelical Lutheran Synod. Join the conversation by visiting our podcast website at wellstech.wells.net. Today is Wednesday, March 26, 2008, and welcome to episode 12 of the Wells Tech Podcast. I'm Martin Spriggs.
And I'm Sally Draper.
And we're your hosts for our weekly conversation about technology and ministry. Good morning, Sally. How are you?
I'm great, Martin. How are you?
I'm well. I have to make a confession, though. We're pre-recording this episode because as you're listening to this, I and my wife, Debbie, are enjoying the sunny skies of Albuquerque, New Mexico. So I'm hoping we're having a great time. There's no rain, and I'm working on my tan, an early start on my summer tan.
Making me jealous there, Martin.
I'm not there yet. All right. Well, we have a great show for you today. I think the last 2 weeks we've been talking about addictions and internet pornography. We're gonna move into a little bit lighter territory and a lighter topic. We're gonna talk to Professor Dave Pelzel of Martin Luther College and talk about smart boards and their uses in the classroom. And Sally and I we're gonna spend a little bit of time talking about a subject that is happening, but you may not even know what's happening to you on the internet, and that's what's commonly known as Web 2.0. Sally, what's Web 2.0?
Well, Web 2.0 is a shift that's a pretty major one. Some people kind of liken it to the printing press that came about in the 1500s, but it's a shift to allowing individuals to publish on the web. And there's lots of different tools, lots of different free tools that allow this. And so that the message is now coming from the world instead of from just an elite few who could push out a message in the past, had publication systems behind them. Now anyone can publish. They can have blogs and wikis and photo and video sharing. It's really kind of limitless at this point, the different ways that you can make your voice heard via the internet.
So what was Web 1.0?
Well, I think Web 1.0 was kind of characterized by just the initial stages of the internet and the fact that in that case, only a few could publish. It was more difficult. You had to be fairly, I guess, kind of a geek to have the knowledge to write the coding and that kind of thing to put content out on the web. And things weren't visually appealing, probably in the Web 1.0 stage. You couldn't be as creative with what you were putting out there, but it was just the beginnings of the internet. Now we've shifted, and everyone can have a voice and do it in a lot of different ways, and there's just tons of creativity behind it. It's really exciting to see.
As we talk about this read-write web, which is really what Web 2.0 is, there's some good and there's some bad that go along with that, with Web 2.0. And, some of the good things is it's easy. You can go out and you can get the word out. You can publish. Everybody can self-publish. People have access to far more information than they ever used to have before through the millions of blogs that are out there. So information travels very quickly on the internet at this point, as so many people are online and contributing to it. So it's not just under the control of those people who have websites per se, the corporations, and that's how it used to be, where you go to the web but you didn't have a lot to read that wasn't authorized by somebody's legal department. But now everything's out there, and that's part of the bad part too. Your life can be much more public, so you really have to be careful about what you're putting or what you're writing, to the web. And some people aren't all that discerning what they're putting out there, and there's some ramifications of that when you're sharing some things that are very private and personal that can really get you into trouble down the line. A lot of lawsuits coming down the pike. Some trouble for people getting jobs because they've shared some indiscretions of their youth that potential employers are now going out and finding on the internet, and they're saying, hey, you know, this the character, this person is in question, because, you know, look at what they wrote 5 years ago about their experiences at a party or, you know, doing something else that, you know, may not be all that professional.
I even read a case where future spouses are Googling to find the history on their potential spouse. And so, you know, you put things out there and you don't think much of it in your youth, but those things don't ever go away when you put them in a public venue like the internet. So definitely something to consider when you're making yourself revealed on the internet.
Yeah, there's obviously the good and the bad. I think one of the good things is that it's somewhat diminishing the importance of the local computer. There are many things now that you can do online that, you know, up until now, before Web 2.0, you could not. You had to do those on the local computer. All the online apps that are now available, you know, the word processing applications, the Google Docs, all the suite of applications that allow you to you do PowerPoint presentations, the ability to do email, you know, online. You don't have to be restricted. Gmail is a good example, Hotmail. All those are part of the read-write Web 2.0 revolution that's really going on. That has a good side and a bad side as well. You really have to trust the vendors that you're using. So if you're putting all of your email, let's say, on Gmail, you're trusting Google that they're going to protect that, and they're going to protect your privacy, and they're not going to allow hackers into their systems to get at some of that private information that typically is in your emails. So that's something to think about. Another thing to think about would be, how long are those vendors going to be around? If you're going to entrust, you know, all of your documents on you know, an online storage, you know, mechanism that stores all the things that you do and the letters that you write and the communications that you have, you want to be confident that you're going to be able to get at that stuff a year from now or 2 years from now or 5 years from now. So you have to think hard about, you know, what you're putting on there, and, you know, you probably always would want to have a backup for that kind of thing too.
I read an interesting article on the Infinite Thinking Machine blog, which is a blog kind of aimed at teachers, talking about how what we might call computing in a cloud, not having the need to have really strong hardware
cloud
behind
cloud being
your
the
computing.
Internet, right?
Exactly. Right. And what they're saying is that this is promoting digital equality. Many students, for instance, don't have the ability to have the complete Microsoft suite on their home computers or whatever, but they can sit at the library and use Google Docs to create the same kind of content on the internet without having, you know, the hardware or software requirements of the past. So a lot of leveling of the playing field with this Web 2.0 technology.
Absolutely. And there is application to ministry here as well. I think it's a good thing as far as our personal evangelism efforts are concerned, especially in outreach. When you think about the ability to publish on the internet and to have conversations on the internet through social networks, those are conversations that you need to inject your faith into. And it, you know, the fact that you're doing it in a digital fashion doesn't mean that you shouldn't bring your faith, you know, faith along with you. So there's many, many opportunities to share that faith in the process, whether it be, you know, online chats. Just remember that you are a Christian and that you represent, that you are a child of God, and that Christ is a big part of your life. And you will find some opportunities to share that faith online, whether it be through email or through pictures you post on Flickr, which is another Web 2.0 app, or some of the chats that you might have online, or the discussion threads that you participate in, or even on your own personal blogs, what you share there. Your faith obviously should be apparent there, as just as it is when you jump in the car on Sunday morning and drive to church, or you share your faith you know, at the ball game or whatever. Just again, other fields, you know, fields are ripe to share God's word and to share your faith.
Just kind of a follow-up on that, Martin. I was excited because I've been working with our kids a little less than a year now here at the computer lab at our elementary school, and we've looked at things and kind of analyzed, wow, that's a cool video, that's neat techniques that they made use of to produce their video, and we've seen kids doing, math videos or whatever for their school, just a lot of different subjects covered in different videos that we've watched. And our kids actually came around to, we want to share God's word via video. We want to be out there and doing a video. And so we produced one at Christmas time, and they actually made their own little puppet show. They painted backgrounds and made puppets and wrote the script. And now we've produced a follow-up one for the Easter message. And the most exciting thing, we can put that on our church website, and that's cool. We actually sent it into the Kids Connection website, and it's part of that. But our kids really wanted to be on YouTube, and they were so excited when I was able to submit their video and share that gospel message via YouTube even. So there is definitely opportunity to share your faith on the internet.
Yeah, it's the internet and the digital world is just an extension of our lives that we're a part of. And again, what we are should not be checked at the door. When we go online, and we're sharing, sharing our lives that way too. So, this would be a great time to go to our website. We're posting a bunch of links, and some of them we maybe even haven't mentioned on the show here, to kind of get you up to speed on Web 2.0. I know that there's a site that we should make available about the top Web 2.0 apps out there, that just to kind of give you a sense for what's available. The field is so broad that you may not even be aware that some of these things exist. There's task managers, there's calendars, there's email applications, there's word processing. We mentioned social networking, picture sites, picture editing. I mean, just the list goes on and on and on. So take a look at our website, wellstech.wells.net, and we'll post a bunch of links there that'll help you kind of get up to speed, kind of a primer on Web 2.0, and see if there's anything there that intrigues you. Up next is our conversation with Professor Dave Pelzel from Martin Luther College. He's a mathematics professor there. He's had significant experience with training on smart boards. Smart boards are basically digital whiteboards that can be used in classroom environments that are becoming more and more popular within our well circles too. And let's listen to Dave talk about the wonderful things that you can do now through this kind of technology. With us today is Professor Dave Pelzel from Martin Luther College in New Ulm, Minnesota. Thanks for joining us today, Dave.
I appreciate the opportunity.
Can you tell us a little bit about your position there at Martin Luther College, how long you've been there, and what your responsibilities are?
I've been teaching mathematics here for the past 24 years, and
wow.
Most of it is mathematics related to education, of course, because we are preparing teachers. I also have interest in teaching higher level math courses. I teach a lot of math majors who are hoping someday to become teachers in our Lutheran high schools.
Oh, great. Okay. Now, one of the reasons that we wanted to have you on is that you've also been spending some time in the area of smart boards. Can you maybe explain for our listeners exactly what a smart board is?
Well, a smart board happens to be a particular vendor's name for what might be described as an interactive whiteboard. It would be like a whiteboard that you can write on that would be similar to the monitor of a computer, except that you can write on it, you can touch on it, you can move things on it. So it's totally interactive. And then, of course, you can also save things, just like you can save things with a computer that you're working on.
So it works in conjunction with the computer, so you project your computer screen onto the whiteboard with an LCD projector of some type?
That is correct, yeah. There are a variety of setups. What we have here are, we have a projector in each of our classrooms that has a smart board, and the projector is then connected to the computer. But they do offer different varieties of smart boards or interactive boards that have either a screen built into with a projector, or they have a projector that's attached to the smart board. The cheapest setup is, of course, the one that we are using, where you have a projector connected to the computer, and then the board is connected to the computer.
How many smart boards are there on campus?
Presently, we have four, and there are plans to add two to three or four next year. They're particularly useful in the education area, although there has been some movement also to provide some smart boards for students that are in the pastoral training program so that they have get some familiarity with it.
Interesting. How exactly does a smart board enhance learning? Is it for a particular type of student or presentation model or anything like that?
Well, I guess I would say that one of the ways in which you can compare it to some other types of education is that a smart board is kind of a magnification of what can be done with PowerPoint, because with PowerPoint you can do a lot of things that enhance education, but the idea of being able to touch and move things with your hand is a real extra plus, so to say. You can run PowerPoint on a smart board, but the smart board itself is like using PowerPoint, but with the additional attraction of being able to manipulate things with your hands and write things on it, and everything like that can be saved. Now, as far as educational value, I think it's one of many different technologies that can be used to meet the needs of students. Some students are more visual than others, and this is certainly a visual medium. But the fact also that they can come up to the board and interact with it by using their hand or a pen if they like also gives them that touch-type interaction, which is an aid to education and to learning.
So you're engaging more of the senses in to some degree. As you look across the Synod and, you know, smart board usage, are there particular subjects within our elementary schools in particular that are best suited for smart technology or interactive whiteboard technologies?
Of course, I'm biased because I've been teaching mathematics.
Math, right.
Most, but definitely mathematics is an area in which the smart board is very useful. However, I've taught teachers that are out in the field last summer and this fall and also during this winter who are teaching in unrelated areas to mathematics, social studies, science, English, and all have found very good use for the smart board in their particular subject area. So I don't really think that there is any area that can't benefit from using the smart board, but I really do think that mathematics is one that fits very, very well with a smart board.
And I'm a secondary math major, so I'm with you all the way. I think it's a great tool for math. I'm wondering how hard it is to get the hang of. Is it something that teachers would be intimidated to use in their classrooms, or can they start using it right away, or is there training that's necessary, or what?
That also depends on the individual, I would say, but it doesn't really take much training at all. If a person can write with a pen, you can use a smart board. It's as simple as that. Once it's turned on, you can go with it. But I think there's that initial hesitancy of the user that this is something new. You know, can I really make use of it? Is it going to attack me? Something like that. Yeah. And it really isn't. It's very, very easy to use. And I think that the manufacturers of the various types of interactive boards have tried to tap into that to make it as user-friendly as possible. But as far as, you know, as far as learning, there are a lot of special menus and special things that one can do with a smart board that you don't find out unless you really have taken a little bit of training. And that isn't to say that this is hard. It's not hard. It's just that unless you've seen somebody do something and then tried it yourself, you don't really learn how to do some of the things. And then again, when I say that, there are those that are really very capable technologically, and if there's something that they want to do, they'll find a way to do it, just because of their curiosity and their confidence and background.
Yeah, absolutely. I was amazed just looking at the software that came with it, which essentially is free to a smart board owner. Just all of the things that you know, that come with it, from maps, you know, a great tool for teaching geography, for instance.
Yes, they have
on
maps
down the line, right?
Yeah. There, the last version that came out, there were almost 6,000 different images that one could make use of in all kinds of different subject areas.
Interesting. Martin, you and I have talked about the concept of digital natives. The kids that are growing up these days are growing up in this digital world, a world that we didn't have when we grew up. And I can only imagine how this type of technology must really appeal to the children and all those different learning modes that you described earlier. You know, I'm guessing the kids
definitely
are excited to work with the smart board.
Yes. One of the teachers that I was working with in February mentioned that she had developed just a presentation for her students, and when she was going through it, then she had to choose among the children, because they were so wild, they wanted to get up to that board and do the things that she had designed for them. And she said it was so exciting to see the interest that those children had. And this was a fourth grade class that she was teaching, and yeah, the children today have so much more technological savvy than the children of the past. And when I teach the class in using the smart board, I always remind the teachers that if there's something that they have forgotten, ask the students. They'll tell them. they'll provide what the teachers need, because they are very savvy.
Speaking of teaching teachers, I understand you're going to be at a Paris Schools Leadership Conference this summer, talking about smart boards or training teachers on smart boards.
Yes. I assume it will be approximately a six-hour during the day, and it will be somewhat similar to what I normally teach in a five-day workshop. The difference will be is that the teachers will have a chance to see a lot of things, but they won't have a lot of chance to actually do one-on-one interactive things with a smart board. That's the other part of the equation that I really like about teaching a regular course, is that I can be working one-on-one with each participant as they develop their own knowledge of the smart board and develop samples of their of how they are thinking about using it in their classroom. And that part is going to be missing from this day-long presentation, but otherwise I feel like the people are that come are going to get a good feeling for some of the neat things that can be done with the interactive board.
That sounds great. I wish I could be there. I think that it's really exciting technology. We're looking at bringing a smart board here to St. John's and Sleepy Eye and exploring how we can use it throughout our curriculum so that all the teachers, kindergarten through eighth grade, make use of that technology.
Yeah, it is the growing thing right now. There are many high schools that have multiple number of smart boards, and the same thing is true in the grade school. I know of some in the area. Minnesota Valley Lutheran High School has a smart board in every single classroom that a teacher uses. So that is really a very high achievement. I know the same is true of in Wisconsin at Wisconsin Lutheran High School, that they have very many smart boards. And then the same thing is true at grade schools. I don't know a lot of grade schools, but Mount Olive in Appleton, Wisconsin has 7 smart boards. And there are area schools where they've started out with one smart board for a classroom, and then as soon as they get that, then other teachers are saying, hey, why can't we have one? And so it, you know, there's an encouragement. St. Paul's in New Ulm has 2 of them and are planning on ordering another 2 or 3 in the near future. So it's the coming thing.
Sounds like it grows almost organically. As you get one in, you just kind of don't really understand its uses until you have it for some time, and then you get comfortable with it, and then it becomes a part of what you do, and you couldn't imagine, you know, maybe teaching without it.
Well, that's correct. And in fact, that's when I start out my presentation, my opening screen is I'm introducing myself and my assistant, Mr. Smartboard, mm-hmm. whom I couldn't live without.
Right.
and I really am quite serious about that. I have only been using the Smartboard for about 3.5 years, and in that period of time, I've grown so dependent on it that I worry about the day when the computer system fails.
Right.
Because then I'm back to using an ordinary a whiteboard. And it's also something that I tell the teachers that I'm working with that you know, you're coming here representing your school, but on the other hand, you're going to be the person that becomes the teacher of others to use that. Become satisfied that you have the skills, and then you have to turn around and teach others in your school to develop the same kind of skills. And that's really an important part. And you start with one interactive board, and then you go from there.
While the boards are not cheap, the good news is the Synod's been able to negotiate some pretty good pricing through the cooperation of parish schools and with a vendor here. So we'll publish that in our show notes after the interview here. But
yeah, that's good to know.
There is, I know there's a growing need from schools to do this. I know even on the elementary school level, many of them are looking into this technology, and that's got to be a good thing. Anything to increase or enhance the educational experience is a good thing. So,
yes, I agree entirely.
Dave, thank you so much for your time. We appreciate it. Lord's continued blessings on your work there at Martin Luther College and your upcoming training this summer on the smart board technology.
Well, thank you for having me on your program.
Amazing stuff. To think that 10 years ago, or 20 years ago, when we had the old chalk and chalkboards and the erasers and the chalk dust and those kinds of things. I had a couple teachers that enjoyed flinging the chalk-filled erasers at sleeping students. I guess you can't do that anymore because to throw some of the technology that Dave was talking about, probably not a wise thing.
No. But just really exciting to see how the kids are engaged by this kind of technology. They're just right there with you and very excited to use it. I found a video out on TeacherTube. I'm not sure if you've heard of TeacherTube before, but it's kind of the teacher's parallel to YouTube. So it's a video sharing site. And, if you haven't seen smart boards, it's kind of hard to envision what Dave is describing. But I'll make sure and include a link to this video demonstration of smart boards. It's a kindergarten classroom, and you're just will be amazed as you watch the children interact with the board and the kind of things that they can do on it.
Great. And just another plug for the leadership conference that Dave is going to be presenting at. When is that again, Sally?
It's coming up in June, the 16th through 19th, and it'll be in Waukesha, Wisconsin. The theme is Abide in the Vine, and it's sponsored by Parish Schools. And our registration deadline for early registration is approaching quickly. April 1st is the deadline, and you'll get a discount if you register before then. And the final cutoff is May 23rd. So find out more at www.wells.net/jump/leaderconf, CONF.
Great, thanks. Up next, our picks of the week. Sally, what's your pick this week?
This week I wanted to point people to a free utility that's available on the internet. It's called Qt PDF. And what it allows you to do is create your own PDF documents. PDF is the standard for electronic document sharing on the internet. And with this utility, it's super easy to create them. You actually install the little utility, and it acts like another printer on your computer or your computer network. And when you go to the print screen, you can select it from the available printers, and you'll be prompted for a file name, and it'll save whatever would have come out of your printer to PDF instead. And so you can just easily share those PDF documents via the internet or via email, and just very quick and easy to make use of this wonderful utility. We use it in our church to PDF our bulletins and our newsletters before we put them out on the internet. Rather than sharing them in publisher or Word format, we're able to put them in this more standard format that everyone can read.
And it compresses the files as well. So if you're saving documents, this might be a good, good step in that direction, and a step toward the paperless office. If you don't have to print it, and certainly you could print it at any time in the future if you wanted to pull up these PDFs. Just a great thing to think about when you're thinking about, well, do I really need to put this in a file cabinet? Save a tree. Send this to PDF, and then you'll always have it for later reference, especially if you want to print it later. So, great tip, Sally. Qt PDF. My tip of the week is for all of you users who use digital PDAs or personal digital assistants. As those users know, you can install applications on those little handheld devices, whether they be standalones or smartphones. All of them pretty much work very similarly, where you can install applications. And one application that I install on mine first thing when I get one is all the products at Laridian.com, Laridian.com. They're the makers of a lot of Bible software. And they make software applications for Palms, for Windows mobile devices, Blackberries, iPhones, iPods, where basically you can put the Bible, in the palm of your hand in your little smartphone or your digital PDA. Just some great products that they make. They have numerous translations, even in numerous languages. They have daily readers, so if you want a Bible reading regimen, You know, so if you're a commuter and you just want to take that PDA with you, you can bring up the daily reading for the day. They have commentaries. Just a great resource, and I can't tell you how many times I've used that in my travels or just in day-to-day use or even at church or whatever. Just pull out, you know, your PDA, and you've got it right there. One of the nice things about it is you can also search on them, you know, just like any other database. So, you know, the costs vary. They're not all that expensive. They're typically, you know, $25, $35. Upgrades are typically free as well. So check it out, www.laridian.com, and look at their Bible software for PDAs. Up next is our Wells.net feature of the week. Sally, what are we featuring this week?
This week I wanted to share a link to our Inspire royalty-free photos and clip art gallery. You can find it at www.wells.net/inspire. And what you're going to find when you go there is over 3,800 different photos and clip art that you can use for your church bulletins, newsletters, anything, even on your church website, any kind of graphic need that you have. These images are available for free download and completely copyright free for you to use for that purpose. It's searchable, and there's multiple categories built into the site, everything from food and drink to nature and scenic pictures, teen-oriented photos, technology, thankful, blessings, peaceful, couples, rocks. We've got it all on Inspire. Just loads of categories there for you to pick from. And you can also donate images to the clip art and photo library if you have images that you'd like to be part of Inspire that would be beneficial to other congregational usage or whatever. There's a donate link on the Inspire website. They've recently been adding a lot more clip art, things that would be useful, you know, for little images next to articles in your newsletter or whatever. So it's not all photos, but obviously photos is just a wonderful resource to have. So lots and lots of beautiful digital photos and things that you can make use of, even in your PowerPoint presentations, but also the clip art, you know, things like Lenten images or Easter breakfast or whatever. Those kind of clip art items are available out in Inspire as well. So I encourage you to check it out at wells.net/inspire.
All right, Sally, should I say it? A picture is worth a thousand words.
There you go.
Check out Inspire. Great stuff there. Thanks, Sally. Anything going on in the Wells world this upcoming week?
Well, I think you were going to tell us a little bit about something exciting in the technology area that's new.
That's right. Something that we're launching as we speak, and that is a web streaming program that we've recently put together. A lot of congregations are asking, well, we want to stream our services, our events, you know, maybe even they're in the school, and we want to stream the musical or the spelling bee, the basketball game, whatever, you know, over the internet. How do we do that? So in response to that, we put together a program, very reasonable, at a very reasonable cost, that allows you, if you've got the appropriate gear on your end as far as the capture, you know, the audio and the video, plug that into a computer, send that to a web address, and then ultimately you're streaming live on the internet. A couple of different formats are available. Flash is one of the formats that you can stream, and also Windows Media. You can configure your own little viewer box. You can put it on your own website. You can brand it however you would like to do that, and you can have as many streams as you like as well. So it's a great tool. We've just made it available, and you can find out all about it at www.wells.net/jump/webstreaming. Tell you about the program, how to get engaged, and what it can do for you.
Very exciting.
I'm sorry. Go ahead, Sally.
No, I was just going to say, I hope a lot of our congregations make use of that. I think there's a lot of people that could attend worship virtually via that web streaming tool.
Yeah, there are a lot of virtual audiences out there that maybe we don't always give a lot of thought to. Our military personnel, our college students, even our shut-ins, as that's probably the largest or the fastest growing demographic of people coming online. is are those people over 65. So, you know, great opportunities there to extend your reach and make sure that anybody who wants to view your service can. So, wells.net/jump/web streaming. If you want to get in touch with Sally and I and make a contribution to the show, make a suggestion, make a comment, there are lots of ways to do that. Perhaps the easiest way is to go to our website, wellstech@wells.net. There you'll find all kinds of ways to get in touch with us. You can leave us a voicemail. You can post a comment. And, of course, there you're going to find the show notes and all of the links that we talked about and a little bit more information about, you know, all the things that went on the show this week. So please take advantage of that, and we look forward to hearing from you. Well, Sally, that'll about do it for the show this week. We end our show, as we always do, by featuring a Wells artist. We have a new group this week. The group is from Wisconsin Lutheran College. Their name is Revelation. Their website is www.revelationwlc.com. We'll be playing their song, You Are the God, from their album, Led by the Light. Thanks, everybody, for joining us. We'll see you next week.